This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
He asked this question at the end, which I love this idea. What you want, baby, I got. With our friends of different religions, maybe try to not just understand why they believe, but respect it. What you need to, you know I got it. That sounds awesome. I would love that. I don't really know what that means. I don't know what it means to respect if we go back to the young earth person.
Right.
Like, I can understand why he believes that, but how can I respect that? Like, what does respect mean? Does that mean that I give deference to him? Does that mean that I'm just nice and kind and don't challenge it? I don't know what respect means. What does that mean?
Right. Well, and it's patronizing, really. If you really don't believe that, but you give lip service to it, isn't that patronizing?
Is that what respect is? I don't know what respect is in this case. You know who we should talk to about this is Kim McKay. And I did have a conversation about this with her once. And I'm like, how do you do this? How do you respect? I don't remember what she said.
Hey listeners, Jake here. The clips that we just listened to from the Hey Jeremy episode a few weeks ago inspired this week's episode. We wanted to explore this concept of respect that Glenn and Matt got into because, you know, it's something that's particularly relevant to people that have defected from an ideology that many of their friends and family adhere to, and that describes a lot of us, right? So, what does it really mean to respect somebody's beliefs when they're so different from your own? And it's not just that they're different. They're beliefs that you used to have, and then you specifically rejected them in an explicit, very personal way, and now you're on the other side of the divide, and people who care about you and are worried about your eternal soul want to discuss those beliefs and the reasons you rejected them with you. And at that point, the whole idea of, you know, respecting people's beliefs or respecting people, respect, or the expectation that people have of having their beliefs respected stops becoming an academic question. It becomes a very material question. So that's what me, Heather, John, Randy, and the famous Kim McKay got together to discuss. So, you know, enjoy the podcast. Or don't. Because either way, I respect your decision.
Okay, and it looks like it is increasing in file size, so it looks like it is recording. Something's getting larger.
Happening.
Yes. So yeah, let's go for it. The nice thing about this topic is that the bumper music is pretty much already established.
But we have to have John Hamer sing it.
No.
Take it away, John.
No. I have to. No. No, I'm not going to.
How do you spell respect? John?
Don't have any idea.
I wish they had made a song like that for Connecticut, because I can never figure out how to spell it.
Yeah, that would have been very helpful.
I think it actually works for Connecticut.
B-O-N-N-E-C-T.
See, it's right there that I lose
it.
See what it means to me.
You have to keep spelling, actually, at that point.
Connecticut. Rah, rah. All right. Well, so respect. We got this comment, and Kim, I saw your email about the different meanings of respect. But the comment that we're sort of responding to is, what about all of your friends? Maybe try to not just understand why they believe, but respect it. So we're going to talk about why you should respect religious beliefs, what it means to respect them, etc., right?
Okay.
Or even just like, how do you respect a person? I mean, I think that's the complication of the word respect, is it means so many different things.
Okay, so what does it mean?
Well, people will talk about, do you respect a person? Do you respect me? You know, like that, that can mean, do you approve of what I do? Do you love me? Do you agree with me? It can also, it can mean respecting codes of etiquette. So to respect an adult means that you listen, you don't talk back. There's respecting a law or a rule, which means you're following and obeying that law. There's respecting a right, like the right to freedom of speech. You're going to respect that right. There's respecting a person. There's respecting a person's actions, a person's belief. But can you respect a person and not respect their beliefs? I think you can. And so that's tricky, though. But what does it mean to respect? Again, does that mean you obey? Do you not talk back? You don't challenge? Or does it mean you approve of it, agree with it? Or do you just understand the person's reasoning and understand that they are coming from a place of wanting the greater good? They just have a different conclusion than you do. And it can mean all of that, but at the same time, not. And it's, I think it's a really confusing word.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree, just from what you all have, you just describing it.
Right.
Because I kind of have that same sense that on the one hand, like you say, there's this level of when you're saying to someone that you don't respect them as a person or something like that, then you are also not having respect, or you know, saying something like that and not respecting even the legitimacy of anything or something, it could be synonymous with active contempt. You know, like you're mm-hmm. you have like a sort of an active level of contempt. You essentially view them entirely with derision. You can't help but, I don't know, you're essentially sneering at the person. So then that's an active thing where you are actively, I don't know, looking down on a person, as opposed to but the alternative, like you're saying, if the alternative is that you have to kind of positively say, no, I completely agree and think that your opinion on this may well be a plausible opinion or something, you know, which you may not believe that, you know, that may be contrary to your own belief. So there's almost here, it's as opposed, even though there's a razor thin line between not respecting and respecting in terms of in the way this is sometimes used, it actually is, it seems like it's pulling you further into the, you know, out of a gray zone when you're on either side of that line.
Yeah, well, it also seems there's, and you're touching on this too, there's kind of an inward respect and an outward respect, where the outward respect may be as simple as saying please and thank you and saying, oh, we love you so much, as we legislate against your civil rights, you know.
Right.
And
people inquire about our position on those who consider themselves so-called gays and lesbians. My response is that we love them as sons and daughters of God. We want to help these people, to strengthen them, to assist them with their problems, and to help them with their difficulties. But we cannot stand idle if they indulge in immoral activity, if they try to uphold and defend and live in a so-called same-sex marriage situation.
So respect is really just kind of a show of politeness and a manner of speaking, versus having an inward understanding and tolerance and a sort of appreciation for people's beliefs or worldview.
An appreciation for their worldview. I don't know. It's hard for me to hear these and not just think of them as just kind of platitudes. Like it's hard for me to think of, okay, a person with respect or you know, appreciate their worldview, you know, in kind of a practice, because the way that a lot of the listeners, the reason I think that this kind of evoked a reaction from our listeners, I mean, the impetus of this was a comment that one of our listeners made about, was that in these very specific circumstances of day-to-day interactions with people, there's this question of respect, or there's this issue of respect. And, you know, these abstract concepts, it's hard for me to bring it into the practical application of the day-to-day life of, how do you interact with people that have beliefs that you think are stupid, you know? Like,
yeah.
That's, I mean, I not to be too crass about it, but that's really kind of what it comes down to. I mean, I feel like that's the position that a lot of our listeners find themselves in, is now I have all these people that believe something that I believe that I think is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think that there's also, though, the idea of what do they do with their beliefs? So when we go at, like, do we respect their actions versus their beliefs? So I can have a great deal of respect for somebody who has beliefs different than mine, but my respect is how they deliberately live those beliefs versus just going through the motions and saying, I have this belief, you know. I don't know. I mean, I think actions are a great part of whether you, where you fall on someone's beliefs.
I think that has a double-edged sword there, because so I was trying to think of like what does it mean to respect other people's beliefs? And I came up with five things that it might possibly be, and maybe we can break them down and talk about them, but
yeah, let's smack them down.
All right, let's smack them down.
Oh my God, Randy!
So yay, Randy Snyder. Okay. So the first is the belief itself, like having a respect for the belief itself. So what if you have a friend who says to you, I believe that 2 + 2 = 5. If that's all he said, you'd probably say, you know, actually, look, I have these two things. Let's add two more things to him. Let's count them. It's 4. You'd disabuse him of that. But if the person says, you know, I have a religious belief that 2 + 2 = 5, and this is, you know, a doctrine that I believe in, then are we required to respect that belief? Because if it's a false claim, then the idea itself doesn't deserve that respect. So the first one is the idea itself. Is right. That something that we're
saying? But you're talking about in that standard, though, that's a falsifiable claim
right.
That the person is then asserting as a religious belief, whereas there's a bunch of religious beliefs that people can assert that aren't falsifiable, even if they're ones that are pretty outrageous. So I was at my church yesterday, and somebody who would come to listen to this lecture I was giving, at the end I was having a conversation with him, and he turned out to be a rather interesting fellow who was able to tell me that he was one of the top 3 people on the planet in alienology.
That's where you back away slowly, right?
I tried to. Anyway, actually, he was pretty giving me his whole dissertation on this, you know. But anyway,
should have been like, I know, really? Because I didn't see you at the last convention.
Comic Con.
No, he was ready to collaborate with me on it, so I didn't want to imply that I had a lot of expertise on this subject. So anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, in the standard benign belief. Because 2 + 2 = 5, I mean, you could see all sorts of ways that people would screw up their engineering contracts and their math and wherever else. Like, this is not a benign belief, but the standard benign belief is that there's like a tea kettle orbiting somewhere beyond Mars. And if somebody believes this, then does that really harm anyone? You can't prove it. You can't falsify it. But it doesn't hurt anyone. And maybe this gives people a great deal of joy and helps them get up in the morning. In that case, maybe you just don't openly challenge it. I mean, is that rather than sneering or...
In this scenario, I did not openly challenge him, right? So in other words, he had an idea about, I don't know, galactic something, and then it got to the point where there was a lot of lithium involved and it affected your light receptors, and there was a lot of folk etymology where the li and lithium was connected to light, and anyway, so there was all kinds of things like that, and anyway, there wasn't a lot of reason, I thought, you know, he's a guy in his 70s, and I didn't think that he needed to be challenged on all these. I don't know how, if it's harming him or not. I didn't get enough, you know, I heard enough that I didn't need to hear more, but yeah.
I think though there's one important difference, is when it's somebody who holds a belief and you have an intimate relationship with them. So in this scenario, it was someone that you don't have a long-term intimate relationship with them.
Right.
Versus your mom or your sister or somebody that you want to have more of a long-term relationship, then it gets really tricky about if their beliefs are something you so blatantly have trouble with, that gets complicated.
And another part of this that's hard for me to figure out how to process the whole respect question is that most of the time when I hear somebody saying, well, you have to respect people's beliefs or respect my beliefs, most of the time that's said by somebody that's losing an argument.
Well, that's the story of my life. No respect. Edgar, no respect.
That's a good point.
In my experience, it's somebody that's losing an argument and it's obvious that they're losing the argument. Then they invoke this idea of, well, you have to respect my beliefs, which what they mean is you have to treat, what they really mean by that is don't make me feel bad, you know, like leave enough of like an open door of ambiguity so that I can still believe what I want to believe without feeling like I'm giving anything up.
Or help me save face.
Right, exactly. Help me save face in this situation. As opposed to an actual kind of, that's why, I mean, when it's kind of invoked defensively like that, it makes me really suspicious of the whole notion.
Well, also because if it were true, then why does it need our protection? Why does it need a special privilege of respect that we grant only to religious ideas?
Well, except for what, I mean, I think Jake's description of it, actually, that made a fairly reasonable point. I don't think that they're actually necessarily saying that, the thing you just said overtly, but you're already seeing what the actual statement is, which is help me save face here. We are two human beings communicating with each other and you're creating a situation that's shaming, right? So I don't know. So I can actually see in that case what the person is then maybe saying is the value here isn't on the esoteric argument about whatever the philosophical or faith or whatever proposition that anybody's making or arguing about, but rather our interaction as people together is what I'm...
Yeah, like Randy told me this story recently. Randy, you're still there, right?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So like when you were talking to somebody at the pool and she's like a medical student and she starts talking about how memories are stored.
No, she wasn't a medical student. I was at my kids' swim lessons. And the lady sits down next to me, and I know who I'm dealing with right away because she, like, is reading a book. I look at the cover of her book, and it's, like, not meditation. What's it called?
Horoscopes.
No. What's the other word for meditation?
Yoga.
Mindfulness.
Yeah. Okay,
so the title of the book was something like Mindfulness as a Path to God. So I already knew I was dealing with some lefty pseudoscientific person.
Welcome. My name is Tom Perry, and I'm going to be your ex-Mormon meditation guru for this episode.
I'm a cordial person, you know, despite what everyone tries to paint me as. and I, you know, strike up a conversation with the lady, and she tells me. Or no, the topic of Jonathan, our oldest, who's adopted and we've had all kinds of problems with, comes up. And, you know, I talk about his past abuse with his biological father. And she says, well, all the research is pointing to memories are actually stored in the nerves throughout the body. And I'm just like, oh
what
my
research?
God. I'm like, well, basic anatomy and physiology contradicts you, lady. That's in my head. But, of course, I nod and say, oh, that's interesting. And then politely change the conversation. The other thing is this lady's job is she's a therapist. So it's not like if I'm sitting next to a chiropractor, I'm not going to, when I find out he's a chiropractor and I just met him, trash his entire way of living and his whole livelihood. How do you do? Your whole field is a sham. And so, you know, it goes back to what Kim is saying. It's like, it's a big difference if my dad comes to me and says that versus someone I just met who just happens to have a kid in the same class as mine. There's a different way in which you interact, and people are more than just their ideas. Where the rubber really hits the road is how they treat other people, you know, how they act. And if you got a whole history of a person earning your respect through how they treat other people, like my dad has, I'm not going to put as much weight on his idea that, you know, Kolob is an actual star that exists in the universe.
Right. Yeah, like, respect is contextual. That's what another one of our commenters was getting at, that the sort of polite or respectful way to treat people who are strangers to you is to not openly challenge them. But on our podcast, like, this is a podcast that you have to actively go out and find and download and listen to. So the rules are probably a little bit different, right? And it would be even more different if it were just, you know, me and my husband talking at the end of the day and it's not going out to the public in any way. You know, we might have a different way of talking about ideas.
Yeah. And I mean, ideas, you know, I mean, first of all, Glenn hates this trope, but ideas don't automatically deserve respect. Ideas have to earn their place. But Glenn made, like, in one of the past podcasts, asserted that you have to agree with someone to respect their opinion. But that's not true across the board. There are plenty of ideas that, you know, if you go like a bell curve of ideas, like most ideas fall in that thick part of the bell curve where it's gray. It's a gray area where two highly intelligent, highly informed people can disagree on the same political idea because it's so fucking gray.
Right. There's like a lot of beliefs or views or whatever that I consider to be academically defensible. So they're in this whole spectrum of what's an academically defensible argument, but I don't agree with it, you know.
Right.
And so it's way over on the other end of the spectrum, maybe, of the academically defensible portion. And I'm just not, I don't, you know, so I don't agree with the person, but I think that they are making an academically defensible argument. But then there's a threshold that you cross when now you're making an argument that is counterfactual or is
spurious,
like falsifiable.
Like this,
you know?
this recent flat Earth phenomenon that's just so depressed. People actually believe the Earth is flat.
Oh dear. Yeah, that one does not deserve respect.
No.
Oh, so are we ready to go on? Kim, are you still there?
That was number one. Yeah, go.
Yep.
What's your second thing?
All right. So the second thing might be that we're being asked to respect people's faith in their beliefs. Well, we've even touched on a little bit where we're supposed to. There's this idea that maybe we should respect how ardently people hold to their beliefs. But the problem with that is that really asking us, when it's a falsifiable belief, then is it asking us to respect the dogged tenacity with which they cling to a belief, not just in the face of a lack of evidence, but also in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary, like the 2 + 2 = 5 thing? Well, to me, that would be impressive without actually being admirable. Yeah, like I'm kind of
so you're,
awestruck
you're
by
in-
it, but not in a good way.
You're impressed with the flat Earth people, but not.
I'm impressed, but I don't admire them.
Not a good way. Not in a good way.
It's like a really impressive goiter.
Or cyst.
I respect your goiter.
Wow, that goiter. That thing is unreal.
But I don't want one. I'm not in the market for one.
I respect your tenacity to refuse to ingest iodine.
Yes.
Just so you can hold on to that goiter.
Giant.
That's a respectable tenacity.
Yeah, well, tenacity, but also faith. But the thing is, you know, faith is a religious principle. And a lot of people who come from or are still in a very strict religious tradition don't realize that faith or the ability to believe in things without evidence is really only perceived to be of value because of the indoctrination that faith is important, that faith is this high principle in religion. So faith in things which aren't true doesn't deserve our respect. And even though we might admire the ability to suspend disbelief, people's amazing suspension of disbelief, that doesn't mean that we necessarily respect it. Someone within the religion might say, oh, he's such a man of great faith. Well, that's a religious valuation,
Which, yeah, what is it compared to? Faith as strong as an oak, you know, which doesn't get moved by wind. And remember Ballard's talk? Do you remember the hymn that preceded it?
Oh, yeah. I shall not be moved.
Glory, hallelujah, I shall not be moved. Anchored in the Spirit, I shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the waters, I shall not be moved.
Right.
No matter what I see or read, I shall not be moved from my position. That it really is a strange dichotomy in how it's perceived as a virtue in the world of faith, and how it's perceived as a pediment in the secular world. You know?
Right.
Well,
did you say pediment or impediment?
Impediment. Why do I keep saying pediment? I got an aversion to the extra syllable. As in an impediment to progress. You know. Right. There's this joke that, like, amongst scientists that we can't progress until the old guys die. We need an entire generation to die to progress in the field
of scientists.
Yeah,
because they're no longer able to challenge because they've already come to this particular conclusion and they love the universe that they've gotten into, the worldview, and they're not as flexible in challenging it. That's what I mean.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, in terms of this world of faith thing, too, I should also point out that that's in some ways has been done. And obviously, we're even using this Mormon example. St. Augustine, who's like one of the great founders or, you know, original thinkers in Christianity, specifically calls out faith or believing in things that are falsifiable, and which he calls that to just be absolutely disgraceful and ruinous, and it's just the worst thing you can be doing. So in other words, not all the world of religion is, you know, that thinks that, you know, that faith is about believing in things that you can't, you know, that are falsifiable, but rather, you know, you obviously shouldn't have things you believe in.
Faith. All right, so I'll qualify it with dogmatic religions. Okay, does that make you feel better?
No, I just want to make that point.
Yeah,
but the people who believe things that we're saying are unfalsifiable, like, they don't see it that way. Like, I guess I keep going back to this in my mind. I go back to this the Tyler Glenn versus Elder Holland, you know, anger discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that Jeffrey R. Holland acts out of I think that he's a sincere person. Like, he's sincerely acting out of a desire to help people according to whatever, or uphold the principles that he really believes in. I don't think he's being duplicitous or anything deliberately so, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, he's just wrong. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I don't know, like, what to, I don't know how to really get past that or say that his faith or the extent to which he believes it, his beliefs or the fealty with which he adheres to those beliefs are really justified or are admirable, because he's, maybe this comes back to the way that people live their faith, because the way that he lives it is a very, you know, he was very condemnatory toward people that are in a vulnerable position, i.e. people that, you know, are leaving the church or doubting the church or whatever. And he's being very dismissive and full of contempt toward them.
Temper tantrums are not cute, even in children. They are despicable in adults, especially adults who are supposed to love each other.
You know, I just don't, that's, I don't know. What, Kim, what do you think?
Okay, just a couple of things, though, is I think respect doesn't mean love. And you can love someone that you don't respect, and you can respect people you don't love. And I think the loving and caring for people make it really complicated. And I don't know. I mean, in your particular example, I think it, I don't know. I'm not making myself very clear, because I think it is so confusing, because we've talked about beliefs that are around pseudoscience. We've talked about beliefs that are religious. We've talked about, you know, there's a lot of different beliefs people hold, yet are we expected to respect all of those beliefs? And thinking about in my own life, do I expect my family members who I know view me as a fallen person, do I expect them to respect my very liberal views? No, but I do expect them to respect me as a person, that I'm a good person trying to live my life well.
Well, and that to that brings up different, there's different levels of respect. Like all sentient beings deserve a very baseline level of respect, you know, respect their right to not have gratuitous suffering, you know. And then you get to humans, and there's another low level baseline of respect of their civil rights. And then there's it's like an equivocation of the word respect. Like we keep saying the word respect, but have we really defined it in its complexity and all of its equivocations? And then there's a respect of like people you use the word respect for as a synonym for admire.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the highest level of respect. And so what are we talking about when we say respect?
Respect. Verb. 1. To admire someone or something deeply as a result of their abilities, qualities, or achievements. 2. To have due regard for the feelings, wishes, rights, or traditions of. 3. To avoid harming or interfering with. 4. To agree to recognize and abide by as in a legal requirement. 5. Noun. Meaningless platitudes that Jake Frost is so over already.
Well, and I mean, as a joke, they brought up talking about respecting Donald Trump, but I think that's a great example.
Right. It's also very relevant.
Right. It's super relevant. It's, you know, it's something we can all bite into. So,
and it's not do you just, respect? It's not just respect Trump. It's do you respect people that support him? Because they're the ones that could put him in office and they're the ones that live all around us. Donald Trump is just a cartoon character.
But both. I mean, do you respect? Okay. Yeah. That's a good question. So, if you're talking about separating somebody's beliefs from respecting them as a person, like him was talking about, well,
so in other words, Donald Trump deserves a minimum level of respect as a human being. In other words, we shouldn't, even though he's calling for waterboarding and worse to other people, he shouldn't be immediately waterboarded right now or all those kind of things, as much as we might like it to happen, you know, or you might think, oh, well, it wouldn't, if you didn't cause it and it did happen, maybe you wouldn't cry too much. But anyway, in other words, he doesn't deserve that because he deserves that minimum level of respect. But we could simply say that all of his views, all of his, you know, narcissism, the shallowness, the crass way that, you know, this is all just phony and faked and that he's cheating every person that he's ever talked to and everything like that, that is of itself, that activity, his persona, the way he's lived his life is worthy of contempt.
Well, is that Kim, is that, what if your family member saw you that way? They said, you know, Kim, it's, I think that everything you're doing is terrible and worthy of contempt.
Well,
but I don't think you should be waterboarded.
That's different. They're saying what you're doing. They could think that what you're doing is. That's not.
But what is Kim doing? She's not doing. Is everything that they would object to is what she thinks and believes. Like Kim isn't like harming anyone.
But she's coming on a podcast and. that challenges religious dogmas.
Well, here's it. Okay, let's stick with Donald Trump because I agree that it's a nice concrete thing to look at.
Okay.
So I agree with John. I think also, though, he has all these despicable ideas, but in our country, we have a freedom of speech. That's a right. So he has the right to say all these horrible things, and I can respect that right. But I do not respect him as a human. I think he's despicable. So there's those kind of things. Now, I do have family members who will vote for him and vote for him strongly. So what happens for me in that moment when I'm hearing their approval of him, and they may not have critically thought through a lot of his stuff.
May not?
Yeah.
You are so kind.
But they are very much emotionally connecting to some of the things that he has said.
Right. I think that's a really good point when you're saying that they may not have thought through it that much, because actually that's going to be true for a lot of these things. So like when Jake was even going, you know, with his Jeffrey R. Holland scenario, you know, which was essentially, you know, there people for a lot of different viewpoints that they have, either political or religious or any other number of things, life issues, career, all the kinds of things that they're doing, they aren't constantly examining those things. Most people have already, you know, locked in most of the autopilot, and they are really not, you know, they're really not going to make a big course correction unless, you know, something causes them to swerve in the road, right? And so it's not necessarily that they are actively thinking about, you know, all of the different issues. They're stepping back and saying, boy, what is this guy representing in the whole course of American history or human history? They're just like, you know, I feel upset because, you know, because there's no longer good working class jobs or whatever anymore. There's no longer, you know, high paid labor because of in foreign countries we have free trade and they're able to pay people just a couple of dollars or cents an hour or something like that, and it's impossible to compete, something like that. In other words, there may well just be a thing where there's a short circuit. They see one thing, they're angry, and then this is a way to you know, voice that anger.
Right.
I mean, and I agree. I mean, people like, supporting Trump is, it changes my opinion of a person, but it's, I can see how people can kind of compartmentalize that part of their, that part of themselves with, you know, some of the other parts of themselves. But when we're talking about like people's adherence to Mormonism, yes, it's true that people don't necessarily reevaluate their connection to Mormonism on a regular basis. But like somebody who's a faithful adherent Mormon, like it impacts every second of every day, like how you live your life.
Yeah. But here's the thing though, Jake, is like, I think like John was saying, I think in the setting of my family around Donald Trump, the two people that I'm thinking of particularly, they trust the Republican Party fully. And so they don't need to question it because they trust it. And if they come out and say Donald Trump is their nominee, done. The decision's been made. I don't have to worry about this. I don't have to stress about it. I trust it. And I think the same thing with the Mormon Church is they have invested so much in this church, so much in these leaders, and it feels safe. And I feel comfortable just following whatever they tell me because I don't have to critically think through things. That takes a lot of work and it's scary. And in the same way, I trust this institution and this institution's telling me things and I can go with it.
Yep.
I understand why people do it, but okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say that's an important point, Kim, is that that's the real selling point. One of the main selling points of any prepackaged belief system, whether it's Mormonism or libertarianism or veganism or whatever, is that it makes a lot of decisions for you because, as John says, most people don't have the bandwidth to go through evaluating every single choice. But it's also the great danger there. But I wanted to go back to what Jake Frost was saying about Elder Holland and how it sounds like, Jake, that you're on my number three, which is you have some kind of respect for his integrity in that he lives by his beliefs, even when it's hard for him, you know, even when it's difficult, he lives by those beliefs. And I agree that I have some respect, certainly, for people who live according to their beliefs. I have much more respect for people who get out and exercise because they know they should than for people who don't, right? Even though they are positive that they should. But even that has its limits, the respect for integrity, because, you know, for example, show me a greater example of integrity, of faith, of living by your beliefs, of religious conviction than the suicide bombers who slaughtered thousands of people on September 11th. You know, they had incredible
Jesus,
integrity.
This got really fucking heavy.
Well, no, yeah, but
we got to do that.
But that's integrity. Does it deserve your respect?
Is that the new Godwin's law? The Ron Burgundy.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Whatever it was.
So what I'm saying is, yes, I respect the fact that I have some respect for the integrity of Elder Holland, but I don't give people blanket respect for integrity.
Elder Holland is exactly the same
suicide bomber.
September 11th bomber. he's essentially morally equivalent to one of the September 11th hijackers.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're giving them points for not being hypocrites, and I think we can all say that the suicide bombers weren't hypocrites. They certainly lived up to their batshit ideology. So you get, I think what Heather's saying is you get partial points for not being a hypocrite.
Partial credit to the suicide bombers.
When you destroy lives, and Elder Holland destroys lives, I'm sorry, it's true. There's blood on his hands for his integrity.
Yeah.
This is what's frustrating is because when we say, like, when people are talking respect, most of the time, the conversation reaches a point where somebody says, well, I respect their meh, but I still disagree with their meh. And essentially, it sounds like you're just finding a way to nicely say, fuck off, you're wrong.
You're right, Jake. It's complicated. It's not. This isn't a black and white issue. Respect is not a black and white issue.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point, that you could be respect. There are a lot of different things you could respect. You could respect the ideas or the faith or the integrity, or as Kim was talking about, people's right to believe whatever they want, that they should be allowed to believe something. But even that, you know, there have to be limits to that, because if your belief is benign, that's great. Go for it. Believe that there's a spaghetti monster in the sky watching you, whatever. But if you believe something that then means that you're going to enslave other human beings or mutilate the genitals of young girls, well, then there ought to be limits on that. And we all agree with that. If somebody came out today and said, I believe in the ancient Aztec traditions that I need to start sacrificing children to appease the gods and ensure the harvest, no one would allow it, right? So we all agree that there are limits. It's just where those limits would be.
But, yeah, and I think that those limits are so malleable that essentially all you're doing is finding one nice thing to say about somebody before you trash the thing that they hold dear.
I don't think that respect actually
exists. I just think it's a rhetorical device to make it seem nice when you're calling somebody an idiot.
Yeah, but no,
you're calling their idea idiotic. You're not calling them idiots.
Right. You can say, I respect your integrity. I respect your faith, but I don't respect your idea, or I respect your belief to your right to believe what you want, but I don't respect the actual belief.
And if there's someone that's built up a lot of put a lot of deposits into the bank of your relationship, like my little brother, you know, his ideas don't define him again. You know, it's like he's a really good person, and he's a really fair-minded person, and I've been able to persuade him towards liberal ideas a little bit. Because I'm right, you know,
with truth on your side.
Well, and as much as you're able to persuade him, then that shows how he's actually a good person.
So yeah, exactly.
But I don't think he's an idiot because he believes in Kolob, you know, and especially I'm empathetic because I used to believe in Kolob.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think that I really would make a differentiation if somebody said, "Oh, you believe that? That's stupid," or "Oh, you believe that? You're stupid." That's not really very different. Like, how different are those really? Is it more than just a rhetorical distinction?
Well, you're showing like you're not giving enough credence to compartmentalization.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
I think that is more than a rhetorical issue, Jake. I think that you should actually train yourself never to tell anybody you're stupid. So in other words, I think that's actually a harmful thing. That for people to tell other people, because
I'm not saying the S word. Okay, we don't say the S word.
I'm just saying that. In other words, that is probably is something that everybody in the whole planet should probably avoid doing, is saying you're stupid to people as opposed to that's stupid. In other words, even if that's still harmful, it's like way better if we could maybe just move
on. So
I think that's an improvement.
I know, but I'm thinking of my brother. He is a very good civil engineer. He's very good at his job, and a lot of that involves science. But he also believes in the global flood. And really, coming from a place where I used to be in that place, and because I know my brother and I know how smart he is, and how conscientious he is, I understand how he can compartmentalize. And so I don't, just because he has a, he holds a stupid idea, doesn't mean that I think that he's stupid. It's because he puts that in a separate box. It doesn't get the same scrutiny that the rest of his life in his work, you know, it is afforded. And so I can understand, you know, I can still respect my brother. I do respect my little brother, even though he believes in the global flood.
But then when you're talking about him not on a podcast, would you say, ah, that's so stupid, even though it's his belief? Yeah, you probably would. But you'd be careful. But even in that situation, you wouldn't say, well, he's so dumb to believe that. Even to yourself, you wouldn't say that.
I don't think that. So if I don't think that, I'm not going to say that.
Right.
Yeah. But the thing is, I'm not arguing that like you shouldn't make a distinction between calling an idea stupid and calling a person stupid. I'm saying from the listener's perspective, meaning somebody hearing your critique, I don't think that somebody on the other side is really going to make a distinction.
Well, that's on
between
them.
Somebody saying, yeah, but I don't think anybody would. I mean, the thing is, it's really hard. I don't think that it's very rare for somebody to hear that's stupid without taking it personally. And you could say it in a nicer way. That's a whatever opinion. But if you attack somebody's ideas or their beliefs, they are going to equivocate it with themselves. So
equate it.
Okay, fine. We didn't all go to Harvard.
Sorry
to be a pediment to your.
I know. Zing. That's what I'm trying to get at is that if you disagree with somebody's beliefs and you disagree with them, you know, adamantly, I don't think that the person whose beliefs you're criticizing is going to make a distinction between you criticizing their beliefs and you criticizing them, because I certainly wouldn't.
Well, it depends on how core that belief is to their self-identity.
And for Mormons, it is very core,
okay.
Right?
Yeah, I think we need to clarify something, though. You're talking about criticizing beliefs and going after stuff. And I think when we're talking about intimate relationships, so family relationships, you need to kind of take a step back and figure out, what do I want out of this conversation? Because if you're really going to have a conversation with somebody about their beliefs and challenge them, what is your expectation of that conversation? So for me, my own boundaries when it comes to Mormonism, I do not challenge any of it unless it's one of the doctrinal beliefs or policy beliefs that I think does deep harm. So if my family member starts talking about the LGBT policy, I will speak up and challenge it. But otherwise, I'm not going there because it's not helpful. It's not productive to my relationship with them. They don't see my way of thinking. And even though I get their way of thinking, challenging it isn't going to go anywhere. And so I think we have to be careful when we're talking about respect and respecting beliefs. I think there is a level of etiquette that goes along with intimate relationships of what is the purpose of this conversation. And if it's to prove you're right and they're wrong, that's not healthy for your relationship.
Well, and so I love that you said that, because kind of what I was thinking is the equivalent, the kind of practical behavioral equivalent of respecting somebody's beliefs is to just not acknowledge it. It's just avoid the subject. I mean, in most cases, that's really what it comes down to, is just ignore the fact that there's a
well, but
that
that's also
a problem,
that's
right?
Also the elephant in the room, and I don't think that's healthy either. But I don't think we have to go after people's beliefs. You can have a lot of common ground in a relationship that doesn't involve talking about the beliefs, and there's a space to allow the beliefs to be talked about in a non-threatening way. And you just have to figure out, when do I want to challenge and when don't I? And when is it okay? I mean, it's hard. We all want to feel loved and understood. And I know that my family doesn't get me. And is that something that I need to spend a lot of time and energy to force them to get me? I don't know. Everybody has to kind of come to their own terms with that. Yeah, I, relationships are really complicated.
Well, and Jake, you're talking about like listeners, and so we're on a podcast. We're just giving our opinions. You have a choice to come on and listen, and if we don't have like strong opinions on things, we're going to be incredibly boring. And it's on him to be able to figure out. He should understand that I don't think he's stupid if he believes in God. I love and respect John, and I've shown that over and over. And he believes in, well, he believes in
something,
some kind of God. But he defends it really well, and he's really smart and insightful. And I respect John. I respect the hell out of John.
Even if you don't respect something,
I can't put my finger on it. That's the problem.
I would agree with Kim, you know, here in terms of this different levels of what we're talking about. It's like Randy's like talking about, you know, the kind of open forum that you have to have when you're on an actual show where we're actually presenting ideas and it's kind of like a free for all, and we are debating each other and people are putting out ideas and other people are saying other ideas. And so if you were just constantly being the level of politeness that you might have with a family member, then it wouldn't actually be interesting at all to listen to. You know, whereas I kind of completely agree with Kim in terms of my own personal relationship. I just even think about it with my own family. I was out just visiting my parents and my siblings and everybody who lives back home in Minnesota. And, you know, we just avoid all talking about any controversial topics all the time out of whatever mutual respect for each other or whatever we want to call that. But I mean, I have family members who are active Mormons, and I have, my dad's an evangelical Christian, and I have family members who are Republicans, and, you know, and I'm a Democrat and a liberal in Canada. And so anyway, so we just don't, every time we even get close to having a talk like that. So at some point or other, you know, somebody launched into some kind of a political thing, and my dad said something about how he didn't like either, you know, Hillary or Trump, and that he wished that we didn't have a two-party system, and so that I was going to go into my diatribe against how people don't understand the problems with multi-party systems. But my mom's just like, stop, let's not talk about this. so Bill, stop, to my dad, you know. So in other words, so she really shut him down. Like, we didn't get to have any talk even about political systems, even about constitution. You know, that is not going to happen, you know. So
right. And I want to say, I'm not saying that we should be, you know, that everyone should act the same around family members as they do on the podcast. I certainly don't. I think that I have a good, solid relationship. I hardly ever have conversations that are tense I never challenge my family members' beliefs unless I'm asked about a specific thing, and then I'll respond. But it's not, I never, you know, instigate the conversations. I guess what I'm really trying to get at, what I'm trying to tease out here, is that I kind of think that the idea of respecting somebody's beliefs and the phrase respecting beliefs is actually just kind of a platitude that doesn't actually mean anything. And in the most practical application, just means don't talk about things that you disagree on, because that's what I've observed.
Would you ever say, I really respect your beliefs, or I don't respect your beliefs? Do you, I mean, is it even in your lexicon? Because I don't say that. I don't think.
Neither.
No, I know. I only hear it from people that are losing.
Well, I also wonder, though, if it isn't. So I'm wondering, you know, about this whole idea as we've been talking about it. Because there's this thing that exists, especially that came out of in the United States, the colonial experience between the North and the South. In the North, there is this basic, this rule of law culture. And in the South, there was this honor culture. And so there's this whole thing about, you know, like having to maintain honor, and honor is something that supersedes law, you know, and so honor culture is actually,
that's how you get the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Right. And so honor is something that is actually inimical to law, and law and order is actually an alternate system that was, you know, they were at odds with each other in England, and the one that pervaded the South and then the West, you know, it's like fighting these duels in a Western, where the two guys have to, you know, at sun, whatever, at 12 noon or high noon or something like that, they have to shoot each other, and that's how honor is satisfied. And so I'm just wondering if this whole notion of, you know, like where people are worried about whether or not their position or their person or their, you know, the things, their various statements and things like that are being respected, isn't some kind of a thing on, you know, in other words, it's coming out of honor culture, and maybe we're even having a culture conflict here, because we're trying to come pull back, I think, and explain all the different ways where we have tolerance culture, you know, and this kind of a thing, which is to say, in other words, the rule of law is this, you know, like Randy is like saying there's a minimum standard of respect everyone has, in other words, but in other words, he's saying there is a rule of law minimum here. So in other words, he's defining, this is all about the rule of law, and Heather is talking about, this is about the tolerance level and all this kind of thing. So in other words, that we aren't living in the honor culture, you know, where somebody's honor can be besmirched, and then they call you out, and you say, "I have been disrespected.
I demand satisfaction."
Slappy, you know, on, right? You know, so, whatever.
So, would you then really favor a trial by combat between Mormons and Exmos, where Tyler Glenn and Elder Holland got a black and a white hat and a revolver?
I prefer a rule of law trial.
Trial of combat.
You would, you northerner.
It has been outlawed by the seven gods.
That's right.
Just before all their followers got vaporized.
Yep.
Wildfire.
Boom, there went that law.
Oh my gosh.
That's a Game of Thrones nerd reference for the non-Game of Thrones fans.
Hey, Game of Thrones is not nerdy.
It's
so cool.
I know, there's so many wonderful boobs. And floppy wieners.
Two at a time,
mostly. I guess I missed the episode where it wasn't. But so, Jake, I do kind of want to address this question head on of whether you can actually respect a person who holds views that you really think are stupid. And so when Kent and I got married, he was very far right, very far right. He watched so much Fox News and Bill O'Reilly. And this was in 2003. And we would just, like, for the first year of our marriage, we would just have these long arguments till, you know, all hours of the morning about the Iraq war. And he was convinced that we would be greeted as liberators, and George Bush W would go in down in the history books as this great man who brought democracy to the Middle East, and on and on. And so, and during that time, I would have said that I thought that his ideas were stupid, but I wouldn't have married anybody that I thought was stupid, you know, or that I didn't respect.
Ooh, that's good.
However,
you've
now that he's
now
come
you've dishonored
all
the
him way over
because you brought up all of his failures, of
it. Right?
And now we'll have a duel tonight. No.
He'll stab you with his sword.
But I will say this: now that he is basically holds the same political views that I do, and has come all the way across the aisle, I respect him more. I do.
Right, exactly. So it did affect your respect for him as a person.
It did.
She married him when he had those ideas.
I still respect him, but
it affected it. Right. But okay. I guess what I'm saying is, like, respect just seems like a rhetorical device used to so that you feel obligated to say one nice thing before you trash something about somebody, or not trash. I'm not saying that, like, I'm going into stuff and I'm not going into conversations and being an asshole. Like, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that, like, if you, when you disagree and challenge somebody's ideas and beliefs, that's something that people take personally. And I don't think that even if you internally are making a distinction, oh, well, I'm criticizing their beliefs, I'm not criticizing them as people, I don't think that they make that distinction. So ultimately, it just feels like...
empty.
Yeah, it feels like an empty kind of platitude that doesn't actually mean... I just don't know what it...
It's like, with all due respect, with respect, right. You're a moron.
That being said...
Well, with all due respect, that is an empty platitude. Usually, right. You say that on purpose to...
Yeah, with all due respect.
Bless your heart.
Because you know that...
You know nothing.
Exactly.
I think it's a useless word, honestly. I think that if somebody was coming to me to talk to me about their situation and they were using the word respect, I would stop them and ask them to clarify what they mean by it. Because it can mean too many things.
Yes, that's my problem. Thank you, Kim. You're getting to the heart of the issue. Thank you.
And everyone else is stupid.
But... yeah, respect, I think a good good analogy for respect is belief. Like, those two words are probably the two most equivocated words in English. Can anyone come up with a word that's more equivocated than respect and belief?
Equivocation.
No, that's very, that's we good. Can understand what that means.
Oh, yeah, no, we do mean that. Okay, sorry. Yeah,
Yeah,
love. Oh, yes.
Yeah, my favorite Tim Minchin line is a Christian said, "Do you have, you believe in love, right? Yeah. Do you have evidence for it?" And he's like, "Well, sure. Love without evidence is stalking."
So Jake, reciprocal evidence. There is evidence.
Jake, would you agree, though, that there is more to a person than their beliefs, like their actions, how they treat other people is also part of it?
I don't know. More to a person sounds a very nebulous term. Like, I mean, what is a person outside of their thoughts and ideas?
Their actions?
They're just a bag of meat.
No, their actions.
Yeah, but those are dictated by your thoughts and beliefs.
Yeah, but you could also hold contradicting beliefs. Mm-hmm. In the same person.
And
yeah,
also,
yeah, but those, I mean, ultimately, I don't know.
Sorry, Jake, go ahead.
Well, I think everything you do is dictated by your brain.
Well, I'm not going to argue that.
But people
everything has to run through your central nervous system, and the hub of which is your brain. And, you know, that's where, I don't know. It is more to a person. I don't know what it means to, I don't know what you mean by that.
The truth is we can't respect anybody but imperfect people, because everybody has vices. Nobody has, you know, perfect actions, and everybody has imperfect beliefs and believes in things that are dumb. All of us, all five of us here have dumb beliefs too.
And all of us have blind spots
and heuristics that we use that are outdated, shortcuts that actually are...
Are you calling me old?
I'm calling your heuristics old.
My heuristics are outdated.
Your heuristics are outdated. You got vestigial prejudice, and though you obfuscated, you're biased like the rest of us.
That's why you're not a Sanders supporter. Because
we need John Hamer 2.0.
What I'm saying is, if you respect any person, you're respecting somebody with certain beliefs that you really don't respect, and probably a lot of actions that you don't respect, because nobody is perfect. So yes, if you can respect a person while not respecting all of their beliefs or all of their actions, you have to, otherwise you respect no one.
Yeah, because no one's exactly the same as you. You know,
I think it's a useless word. I'm more with Kim. I think it's a useless word.
It's
so broad, it doesn't mean anything.
Can we all agree? We'll all take a sacred infant's oath that we will never use the word respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T is S-T-U-P-I-D.
None of our listeners can use it against us.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So
let it our word.
So let it be done.
Wait, to clarify, is the oath that we'll, if we never use the word respect... ever again, then our listeners can't use respect against us.
They can't use the word against us.
Okay.
All right. Which takes me back to being a listener. So when I first listened...
Oh, because you're the only one in this group that was first a listener, then an infant.
But I'm not an infant.
I was.
Well, but Kim, you're like, you got a special...
Jake was.
I listened before I was on.
Oh, God.
You too, John?
For like 2 weeks.
Randy's teasing me.
John wasn't a listener.
He still isn't a listener. I don't think he listens to any of these.
I have anxiety about listening to it.
To yourself?
Yeah, I don't like to listen to it.
Oh, okay.
Just to clarify, John was not a fan boy.
No, I still don't like to listen to it.
Before you joined us,
I like the podcast. I was a fan of the podcast. I liked the podcast.
Really?
I just didn't listen to it.
How can you be a fan of something you don't listen to? You were a fan of
somebody.
I enjoyed its general brand identity, its tenor, and popularity.
Well, and you enjoy being on. Like, you enjoy...
That's a DVD cover compliment right there.
You enjoyed being on, but Heather actually was just an anonymous listener.
Okay, I want to listen to Heather's anecdote.
Oh, I did have an anecdote. When I first listened to it, I was like, ugh, they're so disrespectful. I just can't. I did not get it. But people are on, you know, a different... I was at a different point in the path at that time. And 8 months later, when I listened to it again, I was craving the opportunity to hear people speak about important topics without observing any of the restrictions against taboos, without any kind of special reverence for ideas, just discussing them sincerely, openly, honestly, and even disrespectfully, because it's something that I hadn't experienced before, where so many religious ideas were so religious that they were considered so sacred that they needed even to be secret, that they just... you don't discuss them out of respect. And if you don't discuss something, then there's a certain ceiling of understanding that you can ever reach. And I was really ready to break through that ceiling and discover more about ideas by speaking about them without any kind of respect. And to listen, well, you know, at that point I wasn't speaking, but I was just listening. And it was important to me to hear people just being totally honest without observing that level of respect for religious ideas that I had always observed. It was incredibly important.
I love that. I love that sentiment. I think that's really a wonderful, an important point, I think, about what the podcast has accomplished, as opposed to just because when you are in the Mormon Bloggernacle, there's a sense of, you know, of all of, you know, you're talking about this particular topic, and it has to be maybe, my personal feeling, I can even say as the sole or lone religious person on the podcast, is that my sense of it is, if there is if anything that's about in a religion, if it is something that you can't, just talk about or laugh about, or if you feel if it's so sacred or something like that, that you are going to be that you can't challenge it, then that's the definition of idolatry. That's you've made an idol. So we definitely should feel free to be doing that for everything. Otherwise, you're creating, you know, these sacred calves, right? So,
Well, I also like to think, and maybe I mean, just how I like to think about it, because I've listened to a lot of atheist podcasts where they just turn me off because they're just sophomoric. They're not sophisticated in how they criticize religion, and I think that we're thoughtful. I think we're thoughtful enough.
And John's sophisticated.
Yeah, John lent us so much credibility and sophistication.
And Kim.
Once he joined, and Kim too. Yeah. And even the Harvard.
couldn't even finish it.
Dot dot dot.
Dot, dot, dot. But I like to think that we have an approach that is thoughtful and intelligent, but also there's no sacred cows whatsoever. And I think that's a useful space, and it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
So, Kim, and we don't say that because we're anti-Hindu. I mean, I don't want to spread that rumor.
Oh, don't get me started on Jainism.
Is that our new website logo? Slaughtering sacred cows.
Yes. They're delicious. I love sacred cows. So, you know, Kim, I mean, you're still a fan. You still listen, I guess.
Yeah, I listen.
What are your thoughts on our approach and act?
I don't have any problem with your approach. Like, I get the context, and I think John did a good job of describing this earlier, is I know that you are not acting the way that you would with your family members who are believers. I know that I get the context of what this is. And it, for me, as somebody who is way out of the church, yet have Mormon beliefs within my own home all the time, this fulfills a release that I need. I would love to have been able to walk away from Mormonism forever, but I can't. And so I need to have some sort of a place that I can have some release of the frustration and have it done in a humorous way. So no, yeah, I listen every week.
Cool.
So Heather, I wanted to ask you about this. I just step out for a second, but, like, in what way, you said that speaking, you know, without respect is something that allowed you to kind of break through a certain level of being able to, I don't remember exactly how you put it. It was really a
ceiling
articulate.
Of understanding.
Ceiling of understanding. So why could you dive into that a little bit more? How is it that, why would the tone of how we're talking about something like kind of determine the boundaries of understanding?
Well, in part, it's because we shut down topics of belief, where just like we were talking before, where it's impolite to challenge a belief. So if we were talking about, I don't know, what's a specific belief? I always go back to like the Garden of Eden or the talking snake, right? Mm-hmm. Then I would just kind of drop it and not want to discuss it because I would be afraid of hurting someone's feelings. And besides, those things are in the temple. So maybe you should only talk about them in the celestial room, and that kind of this shroud of reverence that we have for religious beliefs would prevent me from really, you know, discussing with someone so that I could kind of test out my own beliefs, whether or not I think that's possible or useful or probable or where it came from. Or, you know, I was intimidated by the sacred shroud around the ideas away from really challenging them. And hearing people just talk about how silly it is, or, you know, just discussing it as they would, you know, Lita and the swan, without any special privilege for it because it was a religious idea, really helped me say, yeah, you know, it is kind of silly. I don't actually believe that, and I'm glad that I know that about myself.
Well, it really is, and this what happened with me with Mormon stories and Mormon expression, is it thrust me out of the fishbowl to then look back and with a different perspective and see the fishbowl as it was as it was all along when I was swimming in it.
Yeah, totally. But I also feel like I come from a debater background where I'm very happy to play devil's advocate, and I'm very happy to whatever belief somebody starts to espouse, I am happy to take the opposite stance and dig my heels in and say things that I'm not sure I believe, just to test the argument. But I felt like I could never do that on religious beliefs because it was taboo to do that. And I feel like I came to my beliefs about politics, about law, about parenting, about family from kind of participating in those debates. And I never gave myself license to participate in those debates religiously because I wanted to be respectful, you know, because of reverence.
So, well, it almost sounds like, at least in the context of religion, that respect is this kind of protective shroud that we wrap around this one aspect of people's personality that you can't really touch, you know, or you can't really look at or examine in kind of a certain critical way.
Right.
Right.
It's something that we invoke to protect ourselves kind of defensively, you know, right. What it really means is don't slaughter this sacred cow, right? Don't touch this area of my worldview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which brings me to another word I hate, which is blasphemy. And this isn't just some silly little rhetorical thing. I mean, the UN has invoked blasphemy laws, and CFI and other institutions have fought to get rid of these laws, where you cannot criticize somebody's sacred belief. And to me, that's, again, it's an impediment to open discussion, to ideas earning their place, and it perpetuates stupid ideas, objectively false ideas, generation after generation. I hate the word blasphemy. That's why I'm a big fan of Blasphemy Day.
There's a Blasphemy Day?
Yeah, but nobody knows about it except for atheists. It's in October, I believe.
Oh, I'm
there's also if it's my birthday. There's also a Secrets Day, but nobody knows when that is.
Yeah, I listened to something on NPR about how the enormous difference between the Islamic world's the way that they handled the cartoons of Muhammad. You know what I'm talking about? And then there was the French killings. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what? Yeah.
What's the name here? Charlie something or other.
Hebdo. Charlie Hebdo.
Right. Yeah. Versus the Book of Mormon musical. Because nothing could be more blasphemous or insulting towards a religion than the Book of Mormon musical. And yet the church did not, you know,
it advertises fatwa. In the programs.
Yeah. Right. Instead, advertises
the musical. Now read the book.
Now join the religion.
I wonder, surely there's got to be somebody who has converted. There has to be.
I'm sure there has been.
Yeah. And they're probably...
we want to interview you on this podcast. Call.
If you're out there.
and also we want to interview those of you who left the Mormon Church after seeing the Book of Mormon.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah, but that's because we've gone through, in the West, we've gone through, you know, this entire, you know, century and a half long stage of the wars of religion where where Europe decimated itself through the 30 years war, especially when, you know, whatever 30% of the German population was killed over the question of whether or not you can, you know, be willing to live with people who are don't agree with you religiously, like next door to you. So in other words, the Catholics and Protestants killed each other over the whole thing. And what emerged out of that in the West anyway was the idea that that we should have a pluralistic society, and the society is actually stronger when there's a multiplicity of different beliefs or different religious denominations that you could adhere to, different adherents, and that you are all just mutually, you know, allow each one to exist, you know, without attacking them, you know, physically. And so, but that's a Western thing that didn't occur everywhere else. That's something that we achieved through, you know, killing everybody.
Well, Kim, did we get to everything that you were thinking?
I don't need us to get to everything, and I think so. I mean, those were just some random things I sent to Glenn. They didn't need to be all discussed anyway. But I think we covered most everything. We didn't finish your five. I was writing them down. I think we only got to three or four.
Oh, I think we did. So it was the belief itself, the faith, the integrity, the right to believe what you want to believe. And I guess the fifth-ish sort of category was a catch-all, which is like, are we being asked to write the good that's come out of religion, or maybe, you know, the culture itself that concocted the creation myths?
Let's talk about, is religion a net positive or net negative? Let's start that conversation.
Yes, as number five. But I
not in the, at an hour and a half in.
Yeah, that's a very complicated question.
That was my joke. It's a whole nother complicated.
That's a part of it, though, that when people want you to reject their beliefs, very often they're saying, look what good lives and, you know, greater good has come out of religion. That's tied up in it.
Yeah, there's absolutely some people I think should not leave their religion. Some people need to outsource their decision making because they're not good at it. But I don't know. I mean, the idea of whether or not religion's a net good or net bad, that's so complicated. And anyone who, like, any atheist...
You'd have to define what religion is.
Yeah. Well, any atheist who just gives a blanket answer that if we... And that's one of the things that I kind of chafed against with Hitchens' book, How Religion Poisons Everything. What's it called?
God is Not Good.
God is Not Good, How Religion Poisons Everything. I even though I agreed with a lot of his talking points, I did, you know, his conclusion was a little bit overstated over and over and over in that book.
Well, and I also think I push back a little bit. I think that there's plenty of people who join religion not because they can't make decisions on their own, but because the community of the religion brings out really beautiful things in them. And they choose to build on that with one another. And I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. And I do respect, like, I respect my bishop of my ward here for all the work that he puts into caregiving. Like, he is such a good, caring bishop. And I greatly respect that. I think that he would probably be that sort of person no matter what. I'm not sure how much credit the Mormon Church gets for it, but it is certainly a great avenue for him to express that caring in.
Well, and I think having access to that avenue is a perfectly decent, legitimate, wonderful reason to be involved in a religion. If it provides you an opportunity to serve and have community, and that's what you want from a religion, that's wonderful. But that wasn't the avenue for me.
Yeah, and I just wish it didn't come with the baggage. Yeah, the baggage is so heavy.
But for some people, there isn't baggage. I mean, I think about my husband. No. Like, he doesn't have baggage at all.
Well, he doesn't have a gay kid that he's going to tell to be celibate his entire life that drives them into depression and then makes them kill himself. You know, if the Mormon Church could get rid of the baggage of how they view homosexuality and how they treat women, the Mormon Church would be, like, awesome.
Well, they can't, so don't.
I know they
so go to community of
so
Christ.
It doesn't matter. But it doesn't mean that that's all religion. So I have a friend here again who is an elder in the First Nations, and which is to say a Native Indigenous American lodge, and the thing that he's doing in terms of recovering Native spirituality after all of the in the face that the Native American community, the First Nations community, has had in terms of European genocide and imperialism, obviously what he's busily doing in that community is really powerful and important stuff. You know, so there's the whole thing has always been it's a powerful thing, like anything else, like, you know, whatever any power, and it can be a force for good and it can be a force for evil and awful. You know, so.
Well, I'm not saying that I think the church could change. I'm just lamenting the fact that all the good that they can do, like the church, you can't argue against this, John, that the church will put people in a position where they will help their fellow man in a situation where they otherwise wouldn't if they weren't associated with that religion.
No, I think that definitely happens.
Right. So there's all this.
I mean, good... so for example, I mean, like, Bob has made that point, right? Which is that he, when, you know, he was more felt obliged to do good things when he was an active Mormon. And then when he left, he mostly sat around and played video games. You know, and so that's a, you know, okay, that's an example of where, okay, he lost the baggage, but, you know, so anyway.
Yeah, right. So I'm just lamenting how much of a shame it is that they have to, the price of that good that they do comes at such a high price of the bad that they do.
Right.
And it's just a shame that they can't figure out a way to be mostly good and limit the damage to.
I know, but for the Mormon Church, it's impossible because it's corrupt at the center in terms of the because it's all about you know, centralization, these leaders and their power structure and everything like that. And so the whole thing, Rootin and Branch, can't be reformed, you know. So it's just
so rotten to the core.
Yeah, it's absolutely rotten.
Yeah, it's like saying
it's worshiping God. They have the authority, they have the power, they're the leaders, they're the people that you need to worship, you know, and so they can do no wrong. So it doesn't matter what how moral or how good intentioned Jeffrey Holland is, because he's actively doing something where he's making everybody, you know, like defer to him in rotten ways, you know.
My grandfather was a fire and brimstone preacher. There are things that the homilies and hymns won't teach ya. My mother was a genius. My father commanded respect. When they died, they left no instructions, just a legacy to protect.
Hi, this is Chad from Orem, Utah, and I have met one of the three Nephites. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anybody for the closing prayer?
Life doesn't discriminate between the sinners and the saints. It takes and it takes and it takes. We can give it anyway. We rise and we fall and we pray. And we take off the stakes. And if there's a reason I'm still alive and so many have died, then I'm willing to
wait for it.
Should we talk about Sunstone now?
Yeah, well, we should promo it, right? We're all going to get Sunstone, and it's going to be amazing.
It's going to be out of this world.
We want to set expectations very high for this event. So if you have been to an event before that you thought was good, oh my God. You haven't actually been to this event. Oh my goodness. We have a room in Sunstone that is just like the Infants on Thrones room, and we are going to be in that room like all day long. We will not leave that room. No matter how bad it starts to smell, anything that happens, we are staying in that room.
I've never been to Sunstone before, and if I were to go, I would be so excited to see the John Hamer and the Brother Jake. I would be so there with like a t-shirt on and a pendant, and now I'm actually going to be on the same panel.
Yay.
So this is such a thrill for me.
Oh, fuck all of y'all.
No, I'm so sorry. You'll be suffering in Cozumel.
It's going to...
My Mai Tais are going to taste terrible with regret.
All right, so now that it's come to the time, I'm prepared to say C-O-N-N-E-C-T I-N-C-N-U-N-T C-O-N-N-E-C-T I-N-C-N-U-N-T Connecticut, just a little state. Connecticut, just a little state. Connecticut, just a little state.
Oh, I totally recorded that. That is going to be the final version. That was wonderful.
That was awesome.
There's our Easter egg. We just got it.
There we go.
That's what Yay. It only took how many drinks to get you to it?
Hey.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.